Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, broadcast and recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball, capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I am probably not the target market for chick lit books, so I admit I approached Anna David's second novel, Bought, a little skeptically. On the other hand, who doesn't enjoy a little fiction about high-end prostitution and the sex trade in Hollywood? What I didn't expect was getting drawn into a subplot about celebrity journalism ethics. That and a really well-told story that puts the reader right in the mind of the story's lead character, Emma, who kind of drifts through life and I'm kind of surprised to say I actually found that more interesting than I thought I would. Anyway, Anna David, welcome to Mr. Media.
Bob, what a lovely, or should I say Mr. Media, what a lovely review. I liked hearing that.
Oh, good, good.
You actually read it, and, you know, that is all too rare in this world.
I did. Well, I take this approach that I don't want to have someone on that I can't be enthusiastic about what they did, whether it's TV, a movie, a book, a website, and, you know, so there's so much out there that, yeah, I like to read the book before I have an author on. It just seems fair, doesn't it?
It does. Most people aren't like you, and that's actually quite an honor to hear because it's pretty prestigious company I'm keeping. You've had some pretty impressive people on the show.
My neighbor Joe was on. Yeah, you're right. And
I was talking about Joe. It's true.
Now, there have been some very good writers on this show. There's no doubt about that. But thank you. I appreciate that. I'm delighted to have you here. I got to ask. I mean, your book, it deals with girls who trade their company and, shall we say, personal services for high-end labels, credit card payments, and other non-monetary perks. What I really want to know, Anna, is what kind of girl can a guy get on a Walmart budget?
Well, that's so funny. I went on a TV show and they said, you know, you talk about high-end prostitutes. Does anybody introduce themselves as a low-end prostitute? Where do you find one of those? And you know, that I can't really help you with. But in these, you know, during the recession, you know, it sure would be helpful. I mean, that's how I could really make a mint, find the girls at the Walmart prices and start making arrangements for them.
Well, I think they have a different name for that. I think it's called marriage.
Oh, well, that's funny you should say that, because that's very much sort of the theme of the book is, you know, Emma, as you said, you know, she sort of drifts through life, and then in the end, you know, she's very manipulated and controlled by the other people in her life. And in the end, she starts questioning whether or not she should sort of use her sexuality to get what she wants, because she sort of almost admires the way these women who sell sex do that. And, you know, and there's all kinds of language in there about how, you know, women who, especially in L.A., sort of trophy wives and women who marry for money and date men with lots of money are doing the same thing. They're just calling it something else.
Yeah, it's weird. And, you know, we hear about this a lot. And you know, I thought, I got the book and I thought about it. And I thought, well, I don't know. Is this something I'm terribly interested in? But, I mean, I think the reason it worked for me anyway is that your lead character, actually I think there's two, really. I mean, it's Emma,
yes,
who's the celebrity journalist, and then there's Jessica, who's the almost high-end call girl. Kind of is and kind of isn't. Mostly
exactly.
Is. But I think the reason it works is that, you know, we're seeing the whole book through Anna's voice and Anna's eyes, and Anna does not have her self together so much. She really
Emma,
needs...
Emma.
Did I say Anna?
You did, and I'm so glad you did, so that I can say this character is not me. And everybody does this to me. You did it on a much more Freudian level, if you didn't even mean to. But people will go, oh, I love it when you did this to Jessica. And I say, no, I did nothing. Jessica and Emma are made up. And, you know, I'll tell you why she's so not me. My first book, Party Girl, the character is me, Amelia.
Ah.
And I'll be totally honest, when I sold the book, the first thing people said is, I don't really like her.
Oh, great.
And I, of course, took that very personally because I created this character that's very self-absorbed and doesn't realize how self-absorbed she is and all of these things. And so I started writing Bot right when I sold Party Girl, and I took great pains to make this girl likable and to make her not egocentric and self-indulgent and self-absorbed the way Amelia was. And so I am a woman, and I have all kinds of insecurities, but I am not as insecure as Emma Swanson. I just need that stated. And, yeah, no, she does not have herself together, but I also think that that's really representative of girls, not to mention boys, in their 20s.
Hmm. Well,
I didn't have myself together then, did you?
I still don't. What are you talking about?
I know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's there's no age that we really have it together. I mean, someone like the character Jessica, who seems to have it all together on the surface, but that's the appeal of someone like that. Is it, you know, you're getting that person who seems to have it all together, but they don't have it any more together than the rest of us do. It's just how deep, how many layers of onion do you want to peel away?
Exactly. I mean, that's, I think, yeah, the key word is seems, because Emma is very attracted to the notion of this woman who seems so strong, and she's got everything broken down into little theories, and she knows how everyone works. But you scratch the surface, and she crumbles. You know, Emma doesn't even have to say anything particularly upsetting, and Jessica falls apart. And I feel like I've not only seen that in my life so much, but I've been that. You know, I really actually did relate to both characters, probably more to Jessica. You know, it was just basically, you know, I, growing up, you know, I didn't know about boundaries. I had so many dysfunctional relationships with other women, and that's really what the book is about, the way women, you know, compete. They become friends. But, you know, and not to be completely cynical, but I do think in most relationships, somebody has the upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we're talking about, you know, people that aren't terribly healthy, mentally healthy and functional. And so many of my relationships in my 20s were like that, where I was the one controlling or I was the one being controlled. And I didn't have any awareness about it at the time.
You you feel a little better about yourself, a little more confident now? A couple books
Hell
out?
Yes. I mean, turning 30 and really turning my life around really, really did change things for me. You know, I had a big, you know, my thing was that, and this is what Party Girl is about, you know, I was just a little out of control, and I cleaned up my life. I've been sober about 8.5 years now, and so yeah, before that point, I was really sort of headed in a negative direction and didn't know how to get out of it, honestly.
What turned you around?
You know, it wasn't some big dramatic moment, you know, where the sun poked through the clouds and I suddenly saw the error of my ways. It was nothing dramatic like that. I was really, really negative and depressed for so long that I didn't even realize I was negative and depressed anymore. That was just sort of what my day-to-day was like, and I didn't want to do it anymore, you know, and they sort of say in recovery, you know, you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and that was where I was at, and it occurred to me, you know, I had heard about people getting sober, and I'd heard about rehab and all of this stuff, and it sure sounded terrible to me. It sure sounded like the end of fun, but I wasn't having fun anymore anyway, and so, ooh. That was your radio show that just, this very lovely British woman, I'm on your website, and this very lovely British woman just popped up and started talking. you know, and I thought, hey, it might be better than the way it's going right now. And that's, you know, and so it was very undramatic. I just sort of, you know, made a phone call, got honest with people about what was really going on, and, you know, and kind of stepped into a new life.
I mean, it seems like, and I think I've got a couple of years on you now. It seems like there are stages in everyone's life where we go through sudden, and we go, you know, what I'm doing, it's not working. Well, hopefully we do.
Right.
And, you know, when we're in our late teens, when our mid-20s, our early 30s, those are good points to say, you know, something I'm doing here may not be working out the best for me. Maybe it's time to make a change. And, you know, the people who recognize that, I think, are the ones who do better. People who stay on that path are the ones who, you know, wind up having trouble all their lives.
Yes, I think so. Sorry, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, you know, what I really liked about Emma, and it took a while because there's plenty of things, frankly, there's plenty of things not to like about her.
As
you're reading through. And, you know, normally, you know, you read a book and you expect the lead character is going to be very, have a strong character and be someone that you in some way will admire. And you get, you know, two-thirds of the way through this, actually, maybe even later, and you're thinking, I don't like this woman at all. What is wrong with her?
Right.
And I, you know, we don't want to give away the ending of the book because it's really worth picking it up and reading it to see her journey. But it's a very interesting story. It's a very well told story.
Well, thank you. I think that's such a good point. You know, I'm not. I know. I am so much better at creating unlikable characters than likable characters. Honestly, and I mean. The thing is, when I first wrote this book, she was more likable. She was real sweet and all of these things and more confident, and she bored me to tears.
Yeah.
And I had actually sold this book to HarperCollins, and then, you know, it was all scheduled to come out. We still had about a year, and I went back to them, and I said, I know you guys bought this manuscript, but I need to rewrite it from page one because I don't like my protagonist. Mm. And they sort of said, okay, you know, do what you need to do. And I rewrote it and made her a little bit more like me, less perfect. But, I mean, who's perfect in life? You know, I don't like reading books where the protagonist isn't flawed because, you know, my favorite writer is Martin Amis, and he creates these characters that are simply awful. They are vengeful. They are jealous. They are self-destructive, you know. And that to me is interesting.
So I guess I want to ask you, have you this is a very cinematic book. I mean, you can, and because it's you know, it's Hollywood, have you had bites? A few
inquiries. You know, we did sell the rights to my first book, which I actually think is almost more cinematic. And then the rights have reverted back to me. It's you know, it would be wonderful if it was made into a movie. It's kind of like it would be wonderful to go buy a lotto ticket and win. You know what I mean? You read it, you're like, oh, my God, it's a total movie. But then 800,000 books come out a year. And so
right.
There have been a couple nibbles, but nothing, no firm offers. And, yeah, you know, I worry that Hollywood, I mean, I lived there for such a long time, and I worked in the movie business for a little while. And, like, they're not that into making movies that makes Hollywood look bad. You know, because it also kind of attacks a certain, literally the segment of the population that makes those decisions. It makes all those executives and male agents in Hollywood not look like the most appealing guys. So I always knew that going in, that would be, you know, that would be a strike against it when movie rights were being considered.
You mean it's a bad thing that the most powerful guys in Hollywood might be not be in the best marriages and might be paying for sex on the side? And
I know that's shocking. I know that might send you into a state of shock right there, right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's true. It's true. This was a decade of research. I lived in L.A. a long time. I didn't know I was doing research on it at the time, that's all.
No, they never do they? So how did you become aware of this almost but not quite prostitution trade in Hollywood?
Well, it's a great question. I've been a journalist for a long time, and I did a story for Details magazine about high-class prostitution in Hollywood, and I found out about these girls that were penthouse pets and playmates and porn stars that were making money as what they called doing side work, which was what they called prostitution. And I have to be honest, this I made up, this notion of the girls who are not quite prostitutes because they are not taking money, but they're not quite kept women because they have lots of clients. This was a figment of my imagination. I know it goes on, and it's a sort of exaggerated version of what I see dating in LA is like, but I don't know actual girls who do this. And I doubt it's as organized. You know, I created a sort of scene around it where they all do this and they all know each other. I know it goes on, but I don't think it's, you know, Jessica in my book has contracts that she has her clients sign. You know, God knows it's not that organized.
Yeah.
But you know, I see it, you know, as somebody, you know, who, like I said, had lived in L.A. a long time, and I would see these scenarios where, like, girls who never made it as actresses but are beautiful, you know, sort of being, I know a girl and she's, you know, she Facebooks and she's in Milan and then she Facebooks and she's in the south of France and then she's in Dubai and, you know, different older men are sort of flying her around and nobody's calling it prostitution, but she's not paying her own way. So, you know, it was a sort of exaggerated version of that kind of thing. And I took everything I'd gleaned from doing the details story to sort of inform the background.
Now, how would you feel if your legacy 10 years was that by suggesting this fiction, you created an industry that didn't exist?
Nobody
it seems so
has
natural.
Said that. That is an incredible question. What if, you know, the truth of the matter is, and I mean, I think this is what I figured out in writing this book. I don't really judge what they do. I think that it's not my job or anyone's job to tell a woman what she should and shouldn't do with her sexuality. If she decides that's worth something and she finds people who want to pay for it, that's her choice. That being said, the women that I met who did that all did seem, you know, kind of broken. But who's to say that's any different, like I said, than the sort of trophy wives or gold diggers or whatever? You know, I think that I think it's very confusing to make your way as a woman in the world. And I think, you know, I grew up with this, you know, feminist mother, you know, feminist in quotes, because, you know, she talked about burning the bras at Berkeley, but my dad was making all of the money. And so I got a lot of confusing messages. It was like, you better provide for yourself, but, oh, let's hope you meet a doctor or a lawyer. And, you know, and I know all of my friends go through this as well, is how much do you let a guy provide for you? Do you let him pay on every date? Are you supposed to feel it like you're not a feminist or you're ashamed of yourself if you let him do that? And I think that we are all figuring out how to do that. And the only reason I'm not somebody who goes around, you know, pricing my sexuality and trying to make money off of it is just I was raised by people who don't subscribe to that. But if somebody else was raised by people who do think that that's crucial, it's not really a question of morality. It's just sort of, well, you know, how you were raised. What messages did you get during your formative years about these things?
So you haven't put a price on your sexuality. So
I have not, although I'm beginning to think that if I can make a deal where we could make this book a bestseller, I'm willing to make some arrangements. No, I'm not.
I see. All right. We're getting down to the truth now.
I only say that because you can't make a deal like that, Bob. You know, that's the only reason I said it.
I know, but I can dream, right?
I know. I did another radio show where somebody called in and said, what's her price? But, I think this is all interesting. And relevant to every woman, not to mention men.
Now, is this the first story that's ever come from Details Magazine?
Is it the first what?
Is this the first useful story that's ever come out of Details Magazine?
Now, Bob!
Since you've written for them, did you find that anyone actually reads that magazine?
Okay, I almost take that personally, just because I'll have you know, when I was, you know, starting out as a writer, all I wanted in life was to write for Details Magazine. And
I finally got to that point.
I love it. I mean, I don't like women's magazines at all. I find them really kind of very depressing and very fear-mongering and very boring. Mm-hmm. And I don't really like GQ and Esquire. I don't relate to what they're talking about, and I don't. But I have always, Details has always held a special place in my heart. Clearly not in your heart, from what I can gather.
I think you've put your finger on the problem with Details, is that it doesn't appeal to men, and the women it appeals to, well, that's not who they seem to be trying to sell anything to.
It does appeal to men. Lots and lots of men read it.
Okay, I don't want to go there right now.
I think I'm going to assign you a monthly Details reading. I don't think you're reading, because the writing is spectacular. It really is.
You know what? Over the years, I have periodically given it a try again.
Every time you don't like it?
Oh, my God. You know, I think the last time I looked at it, I think the only thing that was worth reading was, I think Michael Chabon was doing something on a monthly. I don't know if he still is or not.
But he is, but also they have Augustine Burroughs writing every month.
I don't know. I was being facetious when I made the remark, but I'm not exactly. It's amazing to me, with all the magazines and newspapers coming down around our feet, the Details is still out there. I suspect it will not be, it will not hold its own too much longer. But anyway, I'm getting off topic, I know.
Who knows?
Yeah. One of the first things you said to me in this interview was that when I made the mistake of referring to Emma as Anna, you were very quick to correct me that no, there was, if anything, the protagonist in your first book was closer to you, that this is not. Why give her a name that is so close to your own then?
I don't know. I mean, I really struggled. I've always loved that name. And the truth is, she was named Olivia for a long time, and then I'm on this G4 show, Attack of the Show, where the co-host of the show goes by Olivia. It's not her real name. And I was like, I can't have that name be, you know. And I liked it ending in an A, and, I don't think of the name Emma as that similar to Anna, but you do bring up a good point. No conscious reason. Who knows about the subconscious reasons?
Now, have you? You sent me, and I appreciate it because I did look at it. You sent me a really interesting video from one of your book signings where a woman comes up and is just loves the book and everything. What is what is a typical Anna David fan like? What distinguishes this person?
Well, the typical Anna David fan is usually a guy who watches Attack of the Show, that show that I'm on where I answer dating questions. And they're usually a little on the shy side. There were really cute people at – there was a brother-sister that was at the L.A. reading, and they were fans of Red Eye, which is this Fox News show that I go on. And they were just giddy about meeting me. It was really, really cute because my mom, it was not that big a reading. My mom was going around going, "Hi, I'm Anna's mom. Who are you? How do you know?" She just assumed everyone knew me. And they were like, I heard them. They were like, "She's amazing. She's on Red Eye." You know, it was really cute. The thing is, because the TV shows that I do are, let's be honest, pretty random, it's not like I get recognized. I mean, that's happened maybe 6 times in my entire life, and I'm always sort of I'm amazed when that happens. It's mostly I get a lot of emails from really sweet people. But let's be honest. I'm not, on the Today Show every day.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, you are the sex and relationship expert on Attack of the Show. First of all, I have to ask you, is it a sign of my advanced age that I still, to this day, do not get the show's title?
I think it's a sign that you're just you think about things a little bit more than the rest of us. The very first time they ever asked me to go on, I said, "What in God's name is that title?" And then I never thought about it again. You know how it becomes, just a part of your consciousness and you never consider it? Yeah, we should get to the bottom of this because I don't really, and I bet you don't know this, it has an exclamation point at the end.
I do know that, actually, yeah. I was just kind of curious. So what would be an example of advice that you've given on Attack? People submitting questions to you? Are you coming up with the – yeah. So
yeah,
what
no,
would be an example?
I've been doing it for 3 years, and so I get gotten asked everything under the sun. But I think the most common question is how do I how do I make this girl like me as more than a friend? You know, for the most part, these are younger boys. And, you know, I think that, or, you know what, or they're, I'm so terrified to talk to women. How do I do it? You know, and usually what I'm speaking to is sort of, you know, look, women are not these terrifying creatures out there to destroy your self-esteem. Don't give up so much power. We are scared of you, too. It's true, especially when you're a young girl. And these boys make women or girls into these, you know, in their minds they just get so, they put them on this pedestal, and they forget that, you know, these are human beings as well. So a lot of times the advice is talk to them the way you would talk to a friend. Don't idealize them. That only makes you more nervous and therefore makes her like you less. I mean, I know when I'm around somebody who I sort of feel has put me on some kind of a pedestal or is slightly, like, worshipful, it doesn't make me like them. It makes me feel uncomfortable. So you know, I sort of advise them, you know, to sort of talk themselves down from this near hysterical concept that they've developed about women as, you know, the sort of keepers of their, you know, self-esteem.
Have you managed to have the same attitude towards editors, or do they still frighten?
Yeah, no, I think that I've managed to control my fear around editors. You know, what I used to, you know, when I went and interviewed celebrities, which, as you know, as you said, you know, that's what Emma does in the world of the book, I used to be so scared of them. You know, I remember when I first started out, you know, just quaking in terror over the fact that I was going to interview some celebrity. And then one day it just sort of occurred to me, wait a minute, these are just people. This is what is terrifying about them? Absolutely nothing. So, you know, I think that 10 years in Hollywood will do that to you.
Probably.
Cure you of that, you know.
Now, let's come back to the topic of the books before we kind of wrap it up here. Are there now? We've talked about the difference between the protagonist in the first book and the second book. One being in the first book being closer to you, the second not so much. Are there any connections between the two books?
They're both very much, you know, Hollywood milieu, and it's interesting because when I sold the second one, my agent said to me, you know, I'm thinking that you should write about somewhere besides Hollywood. You know, you've done a really good, thorough job of writing about Hollywood. And at that point, I'd lived in L.A. for a long time, and I thought, I wouldn't know how to write about any other place because I'm somebody who really needs the environment to be able to create the environment. And that's what planted the seed that I should move to New York, because I thought, God, how sad that my only vision of life is Los Angeles, which I know, I love L.A., unlike a lot of people, and I really enjoyed living there, and I love going back there now, but, you know, but that I knew it wasn't exactly representative of what the world as a whole was like, and it was sort of my, you know, vision into my future is, oh, God, I'll just stay here forever. So anyway, I moved here to New York about a year and a half ago and promptly started writing a book about New York. Yes, well, the first two books both take place in L.A. There are no, you know, crossover characters or anything, but it is a world of, you know, sort of glamour on the outside, but also people aren't quite what they seem. I mean, that's a theme that I'm obsessed with, is what version of ourselves we give off in the world and who we really are. And in Party Girl, you know, it's about this girl who has this wild and crazy life, and so she gets hired to write about it right when she cleans up her act. And so she's giving off this persona of this wild and crazy girl, and it's completely fake. You know, she really is living this pretty boring life. And in Bought, you know, we have this prostitute character who's giving off this notion that she's very glamorous and she really has it all under control and she's very powerful in her own right, when the truth is completely the opposite.
Hmm. Now, the first two books have been in Hollywood. You're writing a new book and you've moved to New York. Did you find, and I know this book hasn't been out that long yet, but did you find that women in between the two coasts get what this is all about, or is the experience a little too foreign for them to even imagine?
Well, I mean, look at, you know, The Hills. Look at the popularity of these shows that that supposedly women in, you know, the middle of the country wouldn't be able to relate to. I think, I definitely get emails from people who are not on, you know, on either of the coasts who relate to it. You know, like I said, I really do think that BOT is about themes that all women can relate to, married, single, with careers, without careers. You know, that being said, I'd sure love to attract some more of them.
Yeah, sure.
Hell yeah.
Well, you know, it was good timing, I guess. I have never seen an episode of The Hills, but last night I did. My wife and I did watch The Celebrity Get Me Out of Here, and I was introduced to Heidi and Spencer for the first time from The Hills.
Ah, yes.
And I thought it was good timing because they seem like they could be characters right out of one of your books.
I would like to think that I write characters that are a little deeper than we call them Spidey, Heidi
right.
and Spencer.
Right.
But I definitely have enjoyed marveling at them.
I couldn't believe that the things that I had read were actually true about these people. I thought, surely this is just an act. These people don't really exist like this. And then, you know, within 5 minutes of being introduced to them, I thought, okay, Hollywood, absolutely. Where else could people exist like this?
Right.
My goodness. Anyway, so when will, you're still writing now, or have you finished the third book?
Well, I'm still writing it. I actually have an anthology that I'm editing, and this is perfect timing because it's about reality shows. And I actually have a writer who wrote about The Hills, but it's basically a collection of – I wrote one essay, and then I hired about 15 other writers to write sort of odes to their favorite shows, and it's fantastic. I have all the essays in now, and I'm so excited about that. So that's coming out next year.
Oh, cool. Very good. And are you still writing for magazines? You mentioned Details.
I am. I'm still writing for your favorite, Details magazine. And I write for Maxim magazine as well.
Maxim magazine. All right.
Yes.
I think it's just a generational thing on my part. I think I just I'm definitely more in the Esquire, GQ, Playboy group, and Maxim Details just don't quite what are you going to do? there's plenty of magazines for everybody out there, right?
It's true.
But I would read your stuff. So,
well, thanks, Bob.
That. No, I really enjoyed the book, and I think people who are not, you know, have not been introduced to it yet should check it out. And as a matter of fact, this is the point in the show where I could say, folks, that you can find Anna David's newest book, BOT, as well as her first book, Party Girl, at MrMedia.com or Amazon.com, and you can learn more about what she's doing at her website, www.annadavid.com. That's solid, A-N-N-A-D-A-V-I-D. Oh, I think we've just been buzzed off. What was that?
Can I give you one more website?
Of course.
CanYouBeBought.com, spelling it out, CanYouBeBought.com, and that has all the links for reviews that I've gotten and TV interviews that I've done, and as well as a quiz for women to take to see if they think they've been bought.
What about me? Can I take
okay.
the quiz?
Men can take it too, but you're going to have to change some of it. You know, you're going to have to sort of change the genders and the scenarios a little bit for it to be applicable for you.
I only wish I've been bought. I'm pretty clear on that at this point. I don't think I've been bought, but I do spend hours at a time wondering what it would be like. So look, Anna, it was wonderful to have you on the show. I enjoyed reading the book. And
well, Bob, thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking to you. It is all too rare that I speak to somebody who has read the book who has such thoughtful questions. So I really appreciate it.
Wow, that's sweet of you, and it's sad all at the same time. So.
I know, isn't it?
But thanks so much for coming on the show today. Thanks for being on Mr.
Thank
Media.
You. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And folks, for dozens more interviews with popular novelists, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with writers such as Sarah Zarr, Kevin Anderson, Alexander McCall Smith, Tim Dorsey, John Darnton, James Sheehan, Paul Levine, Deborah Sharp, Cameron Pasha, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. Whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, Pointer Online, MySpace, Facebook, NetVibes, Multiply, Zanga, Digital Journal, Friendster, Orkut, Bebo, Tagged, iGoogle, Yahoo, Podcast Pickle, Vox, Folio, MediaFly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, or Odeo. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. Subscribe to Mr. Media in iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews within the podcast section of iTunes and click the free subscribe button. It's that easy. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. That's A-N-D-E-L-M-A-N. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate when you share a piece of your day with good old Mr. Media. Come back and see us again real soon, everybody. Thanks for listening.